nails it on the head. Nails it, just listen for a second. Nails it on the head. Mathematicians didn't listen. Philosopher didn't listen. He pointed out that the whole thing is you get to the 13th book, and what the whole goal is to compare the ratios, the logoi, that are governing these Platonic signs, because they are turn out to be the same ratios that are governing all of nature.
Yes.
And what do you find there? If you look at the proofs, they begin and they tell you take a line and cut it or do it and divide it in extreme and mean ratio. In other words, golden cutting. Everything starts with a golden cutting.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because they haven't given you the path up out of the cave up to how they got to it. They start there at the top and they come back down and lay out the proof. They don't want you to know how they got it. But anyway, that's a different thing. My point is that it's these ratios that are the goal. And so what Euclid was doing is he's bringing out what the brilliant Plato, probably the most brilliant human being may have lived on the planet.
And we went for Aristotle instead of Plato.
Well, no, Plato. Aristotle?
Oh, God.
Right.
I'm sorry.
That there's a harmony of mathematics. That nature, there's a harmony of mathematics. And that's, so it's not just this dry mathematics to teach students this stuff. It's to realize that there are these harmonies that you can go into resonance with. And there is a perfectibility. That, and that's where you have the architects like Keith Critchlow and Bucky Fuller, and then they do all this wonderful stuff because they figured this out and they beautify the world.
Mm.
And the Renaissance, go to Florence, and you know, it blows you away because they figured out how to put this into actual artwork, architecture, music.
Mm.
It's incredible, and it's right there, right before our eyes.
Mm.
But we missed it. The mathematicians missed it.
Mm.
And they're dragging their feet. It's almost like they don't want to know this.
Did the artist miss it?
No.
Because
they've been in for a long time. But I mean, in the Renaissance, the division between knowledge systems wasn't as precise as it is these days. But someone like Leonardo knew it all, and he put it in his artwork, and he put it in his drawings and his inventions. He knew about the golden proportion.
But what about other proportions?
Well, there are other ratios.
Ancient and modern, more like 1 to 4, which in my home I have 1 to 4. I also have 1 to 3. Is there, where would you put 1 to 4?
Well, anytime you use whole numbers like that, you can find these.
Well, you know.
No. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Just hear me. You asked it? Okay.
Okay.
The whole number, musical intervals are whole number, the musical four to three.
Mm-hmm.
Take a line, a monochord, cut it 3/4. Turns out that that's a Lucas approximation of the golden mean.
Yes.
Actually.
3/4.
You
yes.
take 2/3
yes.
of a division of the string, and you get 3:2. Golden, a Fibonacci approximation.
Yes.
Take a line, cut it in a half, believe it or not, Fibonacci, even that is, even though it's like the far end of it, it's the early beginnings of movement towards the golden mean. Any of these things will work, but some of them lead to dissonance. There's consonance and there is dissonance.
And then
that's one of the most important things to realize. Not all ratios or so-called proportions are harmonious. Hence, when Plato wrote his dialogues, the things they've just figured out, Jay Kennedy, is that on this scroll, this genius found a way to place in his dialogues things that the government could not crucify him over. Otherwise, they would have, this whole Pythagorean musical system. And so when you come to these really special ratios within the dialogues, he starts talking about beauty, starts talking about the golden mean, starts talking about all these wonderful things. In the places that are dissonant, war, hatred, killing, murder, this and that, they fall. I mean, how could this, he was so incredible. You know, you weren't at Semaphore when Pisano, I couldn't believe what he said. Apparently Plato was this brilliant youngster, brilliant, that had written all this stuff, he burned it. he burned it. I still can't believe it's true. Were you in Samothrace?
No.
Okay, well, what Pisano claims that all the experts there in Greece are telling him, who've delved into it, is they invited all the top people for a big dinner at his home. And he said, I'm going to have nothing to do with you anymore. Because he found Socrates. He found this system of reading. Oh. Socrates taught him.
What?
Oh. I'm sorry, what was the last word?
Socrates, well, that Socrates, he'd found Socrates as a teacher. The teacher had the dialectic method, the questioning method, is really posit the questions or problems which Plato later did in the academy for Eudoxus and Theaetetus. He'd present the problem, they would abduct the solutions. So he figured out this whole thing that was not part of the present system. And all the people at the party apparently were somewhat offended. Because he said, go home. I have nothing to do with you anymore. It's fairly extreme. But that's... Yeah. I still have a hard time believing that what Pisano says. But I can see how that could in fact have happened, because he's so brilliant. And so what Plato did is he'd present the problems. He didn't give the solutions. He'd say, okay, let's double the cube. Present the problem to them, or take this disorderly movement of the planets, give me an orderly hypothesis that saves the appearances. In other words, that you can deduce the appearances from your, and then they come up with the concentric cycles and then the epicycles later and all that kind of stuff. That was coming out of the academy. And so here's this guy who presents the problems, and then according to Sir Thomas Heath, I'm going to say Richard Heath, I've got Richard Heath and Robin Heath is, they call him Uncle Dick. Is that right? He was the great commentator. He's the one who did Archimedes and all that stuff, and then did the commentaries on Euclid's Elements. It's too much. I'm losing my train of thought.
I do. I've been doing that a lot lately.
So what he would do? So he'd present the problem. Nothing.
Again.
But how could somebody write so beautifully, be considered the king of philosophers, and even humanity up until recently didn't realize that he in fact had encoded the Pythagorean music system into his dialogue? And the thing that I found, of course, was the golden ratio.
How did he encode them in? How did he encode it in the Pythagorean system?
If this is, let's say this is the... a scroll that has the Republic on it. One simple one is at the golden cut, that's where he puts the divided line. That's where he puts the cave. That's where he shows his big major secret. Then each time he's talking about certain consonant things of beauty and love and things we might cherish, they would have musical intervals. They would be at a place where you'd have a harmonious musical interval in that string, in that monochord, in that scroll. Where the things that are really not pleasant, evil, excessive, rather than a golden mean, that's where you'd get all the bad stuff, and it'd be at an interval that is not consonant.
Extraordinary.
That's J. Kennedy.
It's poetry.
J. Kennedy. That's the book.
What would have happened if we had gone more to Plato than Aristotle? Which the church picked up Aristotle.
We picked up
both. It would be a very different world.
Well, take a look, like the true to a degree, but much of Plato and the soul and the intermediate soul, what it does to tie things together. A lot of Plato's in there. Plato came in through St. Augustine. St. Thomas Aquinas brought Aristotle. Oh. So both of them are in here. If you look at the Nag Hammadi library, one of the pieces that could have been part of a Bible, so to speak, was Plato's Republic. There's a passage in Plato's Republic.
It was forbidden, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
by the
Council
of Nicaea.
They were skeptical
Nicaea
of Plato.
When, to get rid of everything except the Synoptic Gospels. And they...
In any... I'm sorry.
Yeah, they did. That was just hidden. It was just buried under a mound of, mound of hummus.
Fine. In vino, there is a verite, but we get to a point where we can't express it.
No, we're doing fine. Doing great.
Yeah, we're doing fine.
And it didn't turn up until 1945.
Oh, you're taping this whole thing?
Who is?
Oh, shame on you. You're not going. No, that's fine.
And it was really
a
revelation.
Wonderful conversation.
That's the thing. That, all these texts all of a sudden just came back into circulation. There were a few that had survived, mostly from the Near East, Baghdad, and where these had not been destroyed. But a whole different structure of reality, what we call the Gnostic text.
Yeah.
But one of the most interesting is called the hypostasis of the archons, which is sort of describes the whole structure of the universe in geometric terms of those
The hypostasis of the archons.
Well, hypostases are columns. That's part of the structure of the columns or hypostases.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's a whole mythology associated with it. It's a dark vision, though. It really is.
Just the importance of
it's very much of a dark vision.
I enjoyed the lecture.
Which was one of the reasons it was so castigated and thrown out.
Really?
Yeah. And because the Gospels of Thomas and Mary Magdalene, there's a Gospel of Mary Magdalene, Philip, there's a whole range of texts that were...
Is that part
that
of
had
the
been circulated.
Apocrypha?
Yes. And they had been really, circulating for hundreds of years.
Sure,
it had been a controversy, within the Christian community because of that dark... Because of that dark vision inside of it.
Hmm.
But the structural part of it is the most interesting to me, though. In terms of the way the universe
going to happen
is
now that these,
geometrically, built.
These Gospels are out there now, and the Gospel even Judas is. And I always wondered as a kid growing up in pre-Vatican II Catholicism. Well, someone had to do it. I said, someone had to do it. And he said, well, he was doing what he was told to do.
Risotto e fettuccine. Okay, fettuccine. Fettuccine, porcini.
Can we share this?
Sure.
Let's do
okay.
That's all we need.
Okay.
They brought it anyway. Is yours done? Did you get yours canceled?
I have Arrabbiata coming.
Yeah. This looks really good. This is seafood risotto.
Wow.
Just please help yourself because I'm quite full.
Are you sure?